This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this Monday, January 28th, 2013. And we have the shy Lester Austin, public affairs specialist from Social Security, very soft-spoken.
Shy, but not retiring yet.
Not retiring yet. Good morning, Lester.
Good morning. It's always a great pleasure to be here this morning and talking about the issue of Social Security with a lot of great information to those listeners so they can make plans for their retirement.
Me too. All righty. And John Elliott, federal benefits strategist, returns the emails, retired from the feds, retired from being on the road doing seminars. But good to have you here, John.
Thank you, Bob. And good morning, Lester, as well.
And Julia, the Julia Ziegler, the quarterback of the show, she waves hi. All righty, Lester. I'm going to start off real simple. In order to get Social Security, one has to have something called a credit. All right, that's the minimum amount to get in the door, I suppose. What is a credit?
Well, at one time what they called it was a quarter. Then later on we began to call it a period. Now they call it a quarter. But a quarter, a period, a quarter, a credit, they're all one and the same. This year, the amount necessary to earn a credit of credit would cost a person $1,160. Last year, it was $1,130. So this year, for a person to earn one credit of coverage, they must earn a minimum of $1,160.
Okay. If I earned four times that, would I get four credits in that calendar year?
That's correct. Say, so like today, you go out and you earn that amount equivalent to four quarters. 1160, multiply that by four. You earn all that today. Then you would have earned four quarters of credits this year.
So that's $4,640.
But what I would indicate to you also is even though you might need those four quarters in order to meet what is called the insured status, even though you've earned enough for four credits today, that fourth credit would not be on your account until October 1.
Okay. But that would get me in, and the minimum amount of credits I need is 40 to get in the door?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, once in the door,
well,
though.
Well, let me say this.
Okay.
Let me just point. For those individuals born 1930 and later, they need 10 years of work. And the 10 years of work represents 40 quarters of coverage. 40 quarters of coverage. And for one to earn a quarter, they must be an employee working for an employer, or they are self-employed. In other words, say you have 35 credits, quarters, periods, and you know that you need five additional. You cannot walk into the Social Security office and say, how much will it cost? I'd like to write a check. You have to be an employee working for an employer, or you'd be self-employed.
Okay, back when you and I were growing up, our quarter, we always thought of as 3 months. But correct me if I'm wrong, if I make that $4,460 in, say, 2 months, I get four quarters coverage for the year. I don't have to work four calendar quarters. I just have to make a certain amount.
Let me put it to you like this, and I see where you're going with that. Prior to 1978, a quarter of coverage cost you $50. Prior to 1978, it was a $50 per credit. I'm going to call them quarters, just speaking to you, the American public. So for each, you had in each quarter, because there's only four quarters a year. So that means if you're talking to somebody and they tell you last year that they earned six quarters under Social Security, stop talking to them about Social Security, because you can only earn four quarters a year, January, February, March, being one, April, May, June being 2, July, August, September being 3, October, November, December being 4. Prior to 1978, you had to earn at least $50 in each one of those quarters.
Yeah.
So therefore, even though you might have earned $5,000 in the first quarter, if you earn nothing else during the rest of the year, you're only entitled to what? One quarter of coverage. Well, effective in 1978, the law changed. Effective in 1978, the law stated that in order to earn a quarter of coverage, that the amount escalated from $50 to $250. Also effective in 1978, the law stated and it stipulated that once a person had earned $1,000, whether it was the first day, the first week, the first month, the middle of the year, last month, last week, or the last day, but once that person had earned $1,000, they would be entitled to four quarters of coverage. And since 1978, the amount necessary to earn a quarter of coverage has continued to escalate, whereas this year, effective January 1, a quarter of coverage costs $1,160.
Okay. Now, once I've earned the quarter of the quarter, if you will, or credit, that gets me in the door. But if I want to go to the highest point of the building, in other words, the most Social Security benefit that I could get, it isn't going to be just because I met the minimum dollar amount, correct? It's going to be based on how much I was paid. The more I make, the more I get.
That's correct. What you put into it is what you will get out of it. Social Security benefits are based on the fact of your earnings throughout your working lifetime. So we're going to look at those 35 years of high earnings. Even though you might have some 0 years in there, what we do at Social Security is index those earnings to bring them up to current day value. So still you're going to get back the most you have put into it.
Okay. Now, if I just don't know what it did way back when, is there a place I can go on the net? Can I call somebody? I know I can call you, but your phone never stops ringing. So how do I get around that ringing phone?
Oh, wow. We just got we just announced earlier this month about the Social Security online services that are available with what is called My Social Security Account. So what you can do is go to Social Security's website, www.socialsecurity.gov. And I want people to click on it and stick on it and stroll through it because there's so much information there. And with my account, remember that statement that we used to mail out? We mailed it out once a year. Once a year, 3 months before a person's birthday. And a person could look at that statement, look at their earnings over the years. If anything was missing, they could contact us. But now they can create an account online with Social Security under My Social Security.
Okay, that's good.
And I've done that myself, and it works like a charm. And then once you get your earnings history, you can then use the online calculator at your website and estimate your Social Security benefit.
All right.
What Bob is saying is great, and this is what the American public need to know. Because I'm telling you, this is hot, it's new, it's very innovative, and it gives you an opportunity to do what-if scenarios. What if I want to do this? What if I want to work longer? What if I stop? What if I earn this amount? So with those calculators that Bob is referring to, will allow you to do just that.
Okay. Now, for those of you all listening, and locally on the East Coast, some people might still be at home because, not East Coast, the Metro D.C. area, because of the ice storms, if you will. Outside of the Metro D.C. area, anywhere, we're here, 202-465-3080. In the D.C. area, we're here, 202-465-3080. Give us a call. Take advantage of Lester and John being here, and I'll direct the questions to the people that can answer them. All righty. We did have an email earlier. We announced who's going to be on the show generally a good few days before the show, and this person wrote exactly on what you just mentioned, Lester. I've tried several times to open up a My Social Security account online. And unfortunately received a message, we're sorry, we cannot locate an account for the Social Security number, da-da-da-da. I called the phone number, et cetera. I was told that only a local office could handle it. currently am not receiving Social Security benefits and don't plan on applying for Social Security benefits, but I would like to know how to get my account. Lester, help the man.
Regrettably, I would have to say this. He will have to go into Social Security office. What happens in order for a person to create an account online, they have to be over 18 years of age, have a valid email address, a Social Security number, and a U.S. mailing address. Now, when you that and that's the second step after the first step being visiting our website. And then the third step, we're going to ask some personal information that only you know, that only you should know, because we want to make sure that that is you that we're relating to with this information. So it seems like this person might have got a couple of questions wrong. So therefore, we need them to go into Social Security number to verify, one, who they are.
Okay. I know the emailer. He asks very good questions, and I think he's doing everybody a service by the email, and you're doing the other service by answering, in reality, what happens.
Because we want folks to know that this is safe and this is secure, and we're protecting them. So these personal questions, we might ask, who is your mortgage with? Who's your car payment with? What kind of car do you have? What color is it? So if the person, and we're getting this information from the credit bureaus, and if the person answers the question incorrectly, they have a second chance to do that. And then in the second time, if they answer it correctly, they can get right into my account, establish my account. Then if they miss the question on the second time, they get one more try. After that third try, they get locked out, and regrettably, they won't have to make a visit to the local Social Security office.
Okay, I'm glad you said that. So the information that they have, the questions that they're going to ask you, isn't anything that the individual set up, like, you know, what was your first dog's name, or, you know, where'd you graduate from high school, and that kind of stuff. They're getting the information independently, and then that's kind of slick.
We're getting it based on your tax information, based on information that we at Social Security already have about you. We're getting information from the credit bureau. So, therefore, you should know this information. Now, if you forgot something, that's okay. You just have to go into Social Security office, and we can unlock you so that you can establish my account. And my account is a financial tool for you to use for planning your future. So I would encourage this person to definitely get unlocked as quickly as they can so that they can plan for their future and be prepared.
It's interesting. I was on the phone with an somebody from the IRS, and they had a sense of humor, and they said, it was for a client, and they said, well, what's the birth date? And I said, why do you need to ask that? You know what the birth date is. But I did answer it, and they laughed, but they wanted to know that I knew.
We're moving towards, like, what the banks are doing, what the credit cards are doing, and so forth, to give you more availability to visit that site. You visit Social Security, once you have established my account, there's so much that you can do on that account. It's so much that you can do once if you're not receiving Social Security. You can get a benefit estimate. You can check your earnings. And as John indicated, you can look over the whole record and print it out just to make sure it's right. If a person's already receiving Social Security, they can change their address. They can change their phone number. They can start or change their direct deposit. They can do a number of things.
All righty. I don't know if we have the caller still on the phone. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And why don't you ask the question? I have it in front of me, and Julia gave it to me, but you probably could articulate it just as well.
Okay. The year 2033, Social Security is supposed to be reduced by 25%. Suppose you're drawing Social Security now, and you happen to live that long to say 2033, and you say you're drawing $1,000. In 2033, will that be reduced by 25%, or that would be less than $900?
No, for those individuals that will be coming on the record at that time,
yeah.
Those individuals that are already receiving, so we're talking about new individuals coming on at 2033 and later. And
that's what I thought. I just wanted to be absolutely sure. If you do it before 2033, you're locked in just about.
Right.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know, because I had that idea, but I just wanted to re-verify, because I'm still young.
And you're going to live a long time because you're asking the right questions to make sure.
Okay.
And I would definitely encourage you to visit my...
I've been doing that.
You already went to www.socialsecurity.gov, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And have you established my account?
No, I haven't done that.
Oh, that's going to...
Don't trust Social Security because, I don't trust the computers.
Okay, but... What I want you to know is when you visit Social Security's website, that is not Yahoo, that is not Bing, that is not Twitter. That is Social Security's website.
Right.
It's safe and secure. There have been no intrusions in Social Security's website. Our encryption, and what I mean by encryption, our security, is at the highest level possible. We have folks working at our national headquarters in Baltimore 24 hours a day to make sure it's safe and secure. In about 1939, the G-Men... under Hoover, came to Social Security and indicated that they would like for us to share our information with them. And we told them then no.
Right.
And we're still saying the same thing. We're not sharing our information with anybody. When you visit Social Security's website, you're safe and secure.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
I think the caller and I share a common characteristic. One, I had the same question. When I became, if you will, of age, and I said, I think they're going to decrease Social Security. I was wrong. And I said, if I apply now, I'm not going to get any because I was still working. But I wanted to lock in the favored rate, if you will. And I was very happy to hear your answer to the caller, Lester. And the other one is, I don't trust anything either. But now I'm going to trust Social Security after your good words.
It's definitely safe and secure, and we work feverishly to make sure that is occurring. You never heard of any intrusion in Social Security's website because it's safe and secure. And again, our encryption is at the highest. We have people working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to make sure of that.
Okay. 202-465-3080. Now, when we go on the site, the more you make, the more you're going to get when you retire. Like you say, it's indexed to inflation. So way back when we all started to work, we were making 25 cents an hour or 50 cents an hour. And then we maybe got a buck an hour when we went to work full time. But that's indexed to inflation now such that our prior earning years from way back when won't be detrimental to us as to what our Social Security entitlement will be, even though we might be making more later on in life.
That's absolutely correct, because when you go back in time, Bob, I know, like you said, when you were young back then, Bob, the maximum contribution was about $5,200, I can recall. $5,200, $5,200. Then it went up to $7,800, $9,300, $11,200, $15,300. Well, right now, effective January 1 of this year, the maximum contribution to Social Security is $113,700. $113,700. Last year was $110,100. So you can see the maximum contribution has gone up. So people are actually paying a little bit more. Last year, the Social Security was reduced by 2% that the American worker paid into. That has been restored this year. So this year, they're paying 6.20% of their gross income into Social Security. Versus 4.20%.
Wow. Okay. And it'll probably still be going up. But let's say somebody had the maximum amount. How many? Can you work too much under Social Security after a while? It doesn't make any difference to your maximum. So let's say you work 50 years. Do the last 10 years make any difference?
Well, it makes a difference at what age that person is, when they retire. Because for the retirement, the full retirement age has gone up. For those individuals born 1937 and earlier, full retirement age is 65. For those individuals born between 40, 42, and 54, full retirement age is 66. So those individuals born 1960 and later, full retirement age is 70. So let's look at 67. So let's look at those individuals. I said 42, but I meant 43. From 1943 to 1954. Full retirement age is 66. 66
and
is full
retirement. And not 0.5 or 66, huh?
66.
Oh, good.
So what happens is that person born between 43 and 54, full retirement age is 66. If they take that benefit at 62, they're going to have a 75% benefit payable to them. Their benefit's going to be reduced by 25%.
What's important to remember is that for each month that a person elects to benefit before their full retirement age is reduced by 0.5% per month approximately. So at age 66, if that person elects to receive benefits there, they're entitled to 100%. But say that person say, well, you know I'm eligible for Social Security. I know I can receive it and still work and earn as much as I want, which is true. What's going to happen is they're going to get that 100% benefit. But then a person might say, well, I'd rather wait and just leave that benefit there because I don't need it. It grows by 8% annually.
Okay, so
for each year between 66 and the full and 70.
I could retire at 62, and I'm not going to work. But I, like you say, maybe I'm lucky enough I don't need the money. I could wait to 70, and I get a bump up in value for waiting that period of time, even though I didn't work.
If you did not work and you elect to take the benefits at 70, for each year past age 43 to 54, your benefit will grow by 8%. So in other words, when you elect to receive it at 70, instead of you receiving 100% benefit, it will let's get 4 times 8. That's a 32% increase over the 100% benefit.
Is that 8% a year? Let's say I take me for example. I am 66, which is my full retirement age, but I have not taken my Social Security benefit yet. I mean, my plan, tentative plan, is to wait till 70 and get 32% more. But let's say I either need it or want it before 70. And so I'll be 67 next month. So let's say I take it at age 67 in 5 months, sometime in July of this year. Is that 8% prorated monthly?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's what
So in other words, you'll get the 16% plus a half a year, which is additional based on the 8% divided by 12.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, let me make sure I understand. You guys were moving too fast for me.
We're counting money now. We're counting money.
Okay, well, I should be able to do this then. All righty, at 66, I go, nah, you know, I'm going to go for the gold. I'm going to wait till 70. But then at 67, I go, mm-mm. So I got 8% for waiting that 1 year more than what I would have gotten if I had clicked it on at 66.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Okay. That's nice. Now, let me ask the reverse question. Sorry to be, I'm trying to be the listener and actually be myself. Let's say that I retire at 66, or an individual does, forget me. An individual retires at 66. They don't think they're going to work, but they do go to work, but they don't make near as much as they did while they were on the job, on their, you know, their regular job at retirement. Let's say they work part-time and they make a modest amount. Does that hurt them with the Social Security? Do they get the higher of the two number?
No, what would happen is that additional work that a person has after their retirement, because they might work part-time, and if they decide to work part-time and continue to have earnings under Social Security, what will happen is at the end of the year, at the conclusion of that year, what we're going to do is recalculate. We're going to look at those additional earnings, and that can increase that person's Social Security benefit, even though they may have taken a reduced amount. So once you take a reduced amount, that benefit can increase one or two ways. One way is the cost of living increase was 1.7% this year. 1.7%. The other way is additional earnings. This year, for a person under their full retirement age, they can earn $15,120. $15,120. And for every $2 they go over that amount, we want them to reimburse us with one. In the year in which a person turns their full retirement age, this year they can earn $40,080. $40,080. And for every $3 they go over that amount, we want them to reimburse us with $1. So say yourself, you haven't turned 66 yet, but this is the year in which you're going to turn 66. You can earn $40,080, still get your Social Security. And then once you turn your full retirement age, if you want to elevate that, you can earn as much as you want and still receive your Social Security.
Okay. But if I earn less, it doesn't hurt me.
It doesn't bother you. But, and it doesn't hurt you. What it will do is at the end of the year, We're going to look at those additional earnings, do a recalculation of your benefits, and you could receive an additional amount.
Wow. Okay. I'm learning. I'll probably forget it all tomorrow, but I got your phone number. By the way, how does one contact you? I know they're not going to get you directly, but is there an email that they can email you? Or?
Yes, yes. I'm located on the website. If they visit Social Security's website, www.socialsecurity.gov, in the search engine, they can just plug my name in, Lester Austin. That's L-E-S-T-E-R, last name A-U-S-T-I-N. So they can just plug that in and they can locate me. But if they go to the website, 9 out of 10, they're going to find the answer that they want, because we have what is called frequently asked questions. And if that frequently asked questions, what they can do is they can ask a question, and just like on Google, their answers will come up, and they could select the answer based on their particular situation. So they can go to www.socialsecurity.gov, click on it again, stick on it, and stroll through it, go down to frequently asked questions, ask your questions, hit enter, and the answer will come right up.
And if it's not in the frequently asked questions, you can still find the answer by, say, if you have a retirement question, you can click on retirement at the top of the page, and then you can then go to retirement publications. So if you want to learn about the windfall elimination for government pension offset and other things, you can read all about them and get your answer that way as well. So just because it's not frequently asked questions doesn't mean the answer isn't there elsewhere.
And see, just like what Bob is saying right there, we know for a fact that Bob has been to the website and he has clicked on it. I mean, he's been to the website, he clicked on it, sticked on it, and strolled through it. And in strolling through it, he's found all this additional information. And just like what he's talking about on our homepage on the website, up in the top bars, there's retirement, there's disability, there's survivors, there's Medicare, there's supplemental security income, and my account. So if you click on any of those, they will take you. You can go to publications and read the different publications, and they as well can answer those questions, just as John has indicated.
And within the publications, I just went on because I had a question about the government pension offset. So I think this, your website has changed recently to make it even easier to use. But, you know, it'll then break down questions within the pamphlet or brochure. So you can, you know, you can read the whole thing or just read part of it. You don't have to, you know, scroll through one or two pages on the government pension offset. You can just say, well, I want to know how to avoid the when the government pension offset no longer applies to me. And you can just click on that portion mm-hmm. of the brochure, so to speak, without having to read the whole thing. So it's really even easier to use than it used to be.
And it's easy, understandable language. And if you need a bigger font, all you have to do is say need larger font, and it'll increase to be bigger to make it easier for you to read and to ascertain that information.
All righty. Let me get into Social Security question 201. All righty. A married couple. Each can get Social Security based on their own earnings as if they're not married. Marriage is not a penalty. Is that correct?
Marriage is not a penalty. Marriage is a blessing.
Oh, I know that. No, but see, I'm a tax guy, so I'm used to this marriage penalty business. So I didn't know if Social Security had a marriage penalty.
Now, if you have two people that have worked under Social Security and they have each are qualified on their own record, then they both can receive on their own record. If your spouse will be eligible for less than 50% on her own or on his own record from that which they could be entitled to yours, they can file for a difference.
If the let me make sure I got to go slow here. I'm married. My spouse, if you will, makes more than I do. And if I were to apply for my own and my own was less than 50% of my spouse's, I would go and say, I would like the benefit based on 50% of my spouse. Can I do that?
In other words, you must, in a living situation, you must file on your own record first. Say that on your spouse's, say your spouse is entitled to, let's say, $1,500 a month, $1,600, just round figures. So $1,600 a month, let's say on your record, you're only entitled to $500. So you must file for that $500 on your own record. Then you can file for the additional $300 as the spouse. And that will bring you up to the 50%.
Okay, well, I'm going to take it one step further, if you don't mind. What if my spouse has not elected to take Social Security? Does that make any difference in the calculation?
In other words, say your spouse decides not to take it.
Yeah, they're waiting to 70.
Then, therefore, you would not be eligible on that record at that time.
Okay.
Until the spouse files.
Okay. Can they file and say, I don't want it?
Well,
I'm being a pain, but I'm paid to think like
this. It's a very good question, because what is happening is your spouse at their full retirement age and you at your full retirement, if both of y'all are full retirement age, you can elect to receive benefits on your spouse's record, and she could delay hers.
Okay. Now, I'm going to have a fun question. You mentioned click, and what was the other one?
Click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it.
Okay,
website.
Stroll. There was a dance a few years ago called The Stroll, and then Lester's laughing. We're both from D.C., and I don't know if they had this in Chicago.
They didn't.
Okay, so the first caller with the name of the group that did The Stroll, 202-465-3080. I don't know what you're going to win, but let's see if you're listening. 202-465-3080. Who did The Stroll? Anyway, you did The Stroll, and you're strolling us through the intricacies of this and answering some really good questions. We got an email that I think is a really good question, and it says, currently I'm retiring with federal agency OPM pension. I will be qualifying for Social Security October 1st. And will my Social Security check be reduced because of windfall reduction? But most of my credit from Social Security is from my self-employment. So in other words, they work for a federal government, and prior to or during, they had a self-employed business where they made more money. Will the windfall elimination be affected by the total amount of Social Security, even though it wasn't earned with the feds?
If that person has 30 years or more of what is considered substantial service under Social Security covered employment, they could be exempt from the windfall elimination provision of the law. If they have less than 30, then their Social Security possibly could be affected by the windfall elimination provision of the law. If they're affected by the windfall elimination provision of the law, what that does is we calculate the benefit differently. We calculate the benefit differently because, remember earlier I said that we index those earnings when you look back to high school and college to bring them up to current day value. If a person is receiving a civil service annuity, because they're under the civil service retirement system, then we're going to calculate their benefit using the actual amount of their earnings. We will not be indexing their earnings. So we're going to pay them based on their actual earnings.
Okay. All right. I believe that answers it. Now, a close cousin to Social Security would be Medicare, wouldn't it?
Medicare. That's
okay.
Correct.
And we got some Medicare questions. One, I'll turn 65 later this year. When should I apply for Medicare? That's an open-ended question, isn't it?
Well, we have what is called the initial enrollment period. The initial enrollment period for Medicare is still 3 months before 65, the month of 65, and 3 months after 65. That's the initial enrollment period for Medicare.
So it's 7 months.
A seven-month window. Medicare is Part A. Part A, that's the hospital insurance. That pays for inpatient costs in the hospital, inpatient costs in a skilled nursing facility, home health care, and hospice care. Again, pays for inpatient in the hospital, inpatient in a skilled nursing facility, home health care, and hospice care.
And you should apply for that
at 65 because you've already paid for it in your payroll taxes of, what is it, 1.65%?
1.45% on the Medicare.
Oh, is it? And, yeah, that's right. That's
and,
right.
And it had a maximum at it at 130. Yeah. And then they raised to 135 and they removed the cap on that.
So it's, in effect, free. So if it's free, it doesn't cost too much. So you should apply for Part A. Now, whether to take Part B and pay the extra premium, which is, what, $104.90 this year?
It went up by $5. It was $99.40 a month. Now it's $104.90 per month.
But if your income is higher, you can pay more, or you will pay more.
That's correct.
So that isn't free. So you've got to decide, is it cost effective for me to take Part B? And there's no one size fits all in that.
And that's absolutely correct, John. That's absolutely correct. Because a lot of folks say, well, I don't want to pay that $104.90 a month premium. But if they have TRICARE with the military, if they have TRICARE, TRICARE says they must.
Right.
File for that.
Right.
If you're still working, you don't have to take Part B during that initial enrollment period.
But
you can elect to take it at a later date when your employment stops.
Right.
Because you have health insurance on your job.
Right. Of course, you're right, because you're the expert. But that is also my understanding. But
and you won't be penalized.
For federal employees that are covered under the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program, which I would say is the majority of our audience from week to week, including today probably, then they always I get a lot of questions, to be or not to be, should I take Part B? Because they've got really good coverage for the rest of their life under the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. So then the Part B question becomes relevant to them, should I or should I not? I'll just use me as an example. When I turned 65, I immediately signed up for Part A because I'd already paid for that in my payroll taxes. But I didn't take Part B because I'm a very low user of medical stuff. Doctors. I go to the doctor once a year to get a physical, and my co-payments for that is $20 under my FEHB plan. So at the time I was 65, I would have paid $2,000 a year for Part B because I was in a higher income category.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm looking at $2,000 a year extra out of my pocket versus $20. It was, to me, a no-brainer. So I always figured, well, what if I get a chronic illness or just a serious illness for a while? And I say, gee, I wish I had Part B. Because, by the way, taking Part B in combination with your federal health insurance virtually eliminates out-of-pocket expenses. So later, if I get sick and I say, well, Part B would have been nice to have, I can still sign up for it. Now, I will pay late enrollment fees of 10% for each year I'm beyond 65 in my case, because I was already retired at 65 from the government. But then it may still be cost effective even with the late enrollment fees for me to pick it up later if I need it. So you have some flexibility.
Well, you definitely have some type of flexibility, but the situation is, once you stop, if you're still working, Medicare is your secondary, your employer plan is primary. Once you stop working, Medicare becomes primary, employer plan becomes secondary. Well, a lot of folks have these high option policies so that they can pay as little bit out of pocket as they can stand. But with that high option policy from work and with Medicare, a person could have double coverage. So they might want to take a look at that.
Yeah.
The Part B of Medicare covers outpatient services at the hospital and certain services rented in the doctor's office, and they pay 80% usually what is considered the reasonable cost. Now, if you miss that initial enrollment period, that 7-month window, and do not elect to file for Medicare until later on, say 70, there will be a 10% penalty increase for each year that you did not have it and could have had it. So if you're 70 years of age, 10% each year, 5 times 10%, that's a 50% increase on that $104.90 per month thereafter forevermore. And then what would happen is the Medicare will not become effective until July of the year filing. So if you miss the initial enrollment period, then the only other time that you can file for Part B is during the general enrollment period, which is the first 3 months of the year, January 1 through March 31st. And when you do that again, you're going to have to pay the penalty, 10%, for each year you could have had it. Now, if you're still working, you don't have to sign up for Part B until you stop working. And then an eight-month window opens up when you stop working where you can pay for Medicare Part B and will not have to pay the 10%.
I should add to that, if you're working and covered under an employer-sponsored health plan, like the FEHPP, or then you don't have to make a decision about Part B till after you retire. And then, as Lester said, you have 8 months to sign up before the first 10% kicks in. But also, if, let's say, you're retired, but you're covered under a spouse's employer-sponsored plan, he or she is still working, and you're covered under that family plan, you also get to postpone the Part B decision in the same way. So, again, you have 8 months. Then if he or she retires, then you have, again, 8 months to sign up.
Yeah, and you got to be real careful, because what you find in doing that, and what you're saying is absolutely correct, if you're on your spouse's family plan, the spouse is less than 65, you're over, you can go ahead and take the Part A, the hospital insurance. There's no premium because you've already worked and earned the right to be entitled to that. So you come on the spouse's health insurance family plan. So once that spouse turns 65, then both of you will need to pay to buy into the Part B if she or he is retired. Now, if they're still working, that family plan is still effective, and at the point that it stops, then you got the eight-month window.
Yeah.
Now, this is the tricky part. Sometimes you get somebody, you're on the spouse's plan. Well, the spouse has retired from a job, and they have the health insurance from that job where they retired from. Your spouse is younger than you. So y'all have a family plan based on the spouse's former employer. Then the spouse go back to work somewhere else. But on the current job, they do not have health insurance because they have health insurance from the prior employer. Well, you need to go ahead and file for Part B because you're going to be subject to the penalty.
Well, that leads
so that's
me,
a little that, catch.
That's a good point, and it leads me to a question. Let's say I retire from the government at whatever. But anyway, before 65, and therefore I'd have to sign up for Part B at 65 because I'm retired. But let's say I go out and get another job, and even though I have the federal health insurance, my employer says, well, no, everybody in our company, private sector, is under our health plan, which is fine. Okay, you don't maybe don't really need it, but you got it. So you're covered again under an employer-sponsored health plan. Does that new job in the private sector then allow you to postpone the Part B decision?
You already have Part A. You got an employer that you work for. You haven't signed up for Part B yet. So you have a health insurance plan on the employer.
Second
plan.
Employer.
Right.
After retiring
right.
from
so
government.
You got to put an employer plan.
Right. So then I could delay my Part B decision.
Right.
In the same way as I could have had I still been a government employee.
Right now you got two plans.
Right,
you got
which is perfectly permissible.
Yeah, you got your regular plan that you carried into retirement. You never filed for Part B of Medicare because you had an employer plan at that time, and you left that employer and went into another employer plan. There was no lapse in time. You never signed up for Part B. You should be okay.
Okay.
All right. One more out-in-the-weeds question. Does a high-deductible health care plan impact one's ability with regard to Medicare? Can you have both?
That's the choice of the individual. That's the choice
I don't think you can
when
have
you,
both.
When you sign up for part Medicare. You cannot any longer participate in a high deductible health savings account.
And that's correct.
And so even if you just want Part A, that you signed up for Medicare, right, Lester? You know, even if I just sign up for Part A, I'm now enrolled in Medicare, and that makes you ineligible to continue in your high deductible plan linked to a health savings account.
That's right. When you talk about a health savings account, you cannot have both.
Okay. We just got an email question, and the email question is not right on what we're talking about, but it came in. It's pretty good. If, as of today's column discusses, pay is cut, this is from my causes column, at least for a period of time by 20%, what happens to retirement? That's question one. It might be a John question. If the year in which...
Then I should have paid attention to it.
if the year in which this happens, this year, endures salary reduction due to furloughs, does that take it out of the running for being one of the high three, or do workers get credit for what they would have earned if they were allowed to work full-time? It's a good question.
Well, I think if you're furloughed... It's like if you were on leave without pay because you're not getting paid. So you can be on leave without pay or furlough for up to 6 months in each calendar year with no effect on your high three.
Okay.
Okay.
That answers that.
And I doubt that we're ever going to be looking at this over a 6 month furlough in a year. And that's calendar year. So let's say if worst case, at the end of next year, you're furloughed for the last 3 months of 2013 and the first 2 months of 2014, you'd be okay. It's every 6 months in a calendar year, you skate on it. You're not affected by it in your retirement calculation. If you go beyond 6 months in a calendar year, then, yes, you high three will or could be affected.
Okay. Thanks, John.
If that was the question, I think it was.
I think it was. And the last few minutes or last 10 minutes or so, we really got deep into this. So let's come on back a little bit. We started off really simplistically and worked our way through, and we took it to the hoop, I think. And let's come on down the court. So how do we check out our Social Security benefits? Again, because we laid the groundwork of how you qualify, what you need to do, the influence of one's income relative to what they're going to get. I'm sorry I didn't ask this question. What's the most somebody could get under Social Security as an individual? Is there a ceiling?
A little less than $2,600 a month. So about $2,580 a month. The average check right now.
That would be a full retirement age.
Right.
Right.
Right, at full retirement age.
Could he still get, I think this is a personal question I'm sensing, but if he waits beyond 66, full retirement age, then he'd get the benefit of the
32%.
Right. Okay.
Up to age 70.
So you could actually, if you wait, you could get more than the max.
Okay.
Seems like
actually,
John...
it was two-pronged. One was that, and sometimes I get clients with like 40 grand, and I go, where'd that come from? And it was probably they were entitled to some catch-up or something. It wasn't a normal year. No, it'll say that in the box, and I go, woo.
Yeah.
And I'll take a little tangent here. The listeners should be aware of this. Those of you that do get Social Security is taxable at three different levels on your federal return, maybe not at all on the state return. Let's take a look at the federal. The first level is they don't pay tax at all on it, and that's a very small income. And then the second level, they pay tax on 50% of it. I won't drive people crazy with the numbers. And then the third one is 85%. But what they need to watch out for, this is driven by the total of one's income, including Social Security. It's almost an algebraic formula. So I've had clients that, you know, they didn't call, not that they should call every time they do something, but they took a little bit more out of their IRA, or if they had the ability to take a chunk out of the thrift. And all of a sudden, the Social Security pops up on the radar screen as far as being taxable because their income went up a certain level and the premium, the Medicare premium went up. And they go, ouch, why didn't you tell me? And I go, why didn't you ask? And so people kind of need to be aware of that. I really think the calculation of the taxable portion of Social Security is one of the toughest calculations on the return. And if you do your return by hand, I'm impressed. If you do it by computer and you don't catch this, somebody else will catch it, and they have the initials IRS.
Yeah, Social Security is taxable. If an individual has taxable income of $25,000 or greater, gross income of $25,000 or greater, then their Social Security is taxable anywhere from 25. If they got taxable income of $25,000 gross or more, Social Security is taxable anywhere from 50 to 85%.
And just a few bucks will get you.
That's an individual.
Yeah.
The couple is $32,000 or greater is taxable anywhere from 50 to 85%.
Yeah.
So they can still work and earn as much as they want, but the Social Security is still taxable. And Internal Revenue Service determine what is taxable income, and it's not Social Security, but it's Internal Revenue Service. So whatever they say is taxable income will determine how much taxable so your Social Security will be.
See, what I'm getting at now is people are starting to look at their tax returns and whatnot, and it's too late to do any planning for 2012. It's way too late. Yeah. But remember some of these comments as you go through the year and say, gee, if I'm on this and I take additional money, I go out and work a part-time job, boom. Some of the Social Security becomes more taxable, and we'll wind up with a higher premium. Not saying you shouldn't do it, but be aware of it.
Definitely be aware of it, because when you do your financial planning, if you're doing something else and your income is taxable total, because you're looking at everything, again, with Internal Revenue Service.
Okay.
They're looking at everything.
We're getting the high sign. Lester, great having you. Final comment real fast.
I would encourage the American public right now to visit Social Security's website, www.socialsecurity.gov. Again, click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it, and establish my Social Security account.
John,
go to a retirement seminar before you retire. You'll learn a lot of the things we talked about this morning in the seminar.
Thank you. Spread the word. Listen to the show. See you next week. Bye-bye.